Could I get one naked chicken chips box? Sprite?
Sierra Miss.
Sierra Miss. And one chicken quesadilla. And one grilled stuffed burrito. Beef. And then whatever you want. $20? Who spends that much at Taco Bell?
You do! You just did that!
I love Taco Bell.
How much was that order? Like, how much are we talking?
$20.
Like, oh, $20?
That's what she said. That's impressive. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever spent more than like 11.
The best part is her. She's like, and then whatever you want.
Yes. Whatever I want. Whatever I want. Look at that order he just put up there.
That's at Clint Shane on Twitter. You should follow him. He writes for
Astros County
every now and then. One of my favorite websites, yes. Astros County. And I've started to like the Athletic quite a bit as well, although I can only anticipate that at some point soon Amazon will buy the Athletic and ruin it. Well, just like they ruined Whole Foods.
They're gonna buy everything.
So, yeah,
have they
yeah.
ruined Whole Foods?
There were some bumps in the road. No, they haven't ruined it. I'll say this. As you guys all know, I go to all grocery stores. I'm not a snob whatsoever. I'll go to an Aldi, I'll go to a Whole Foods, whatever it might be. The one thing I always enjoyed about Whole Foods was just how happy everybody was always there to work there. I sense a different vibe about the place now that they've gone ultra corporate.
I enjoy the one on Wa, but yeah. I'm not an expert in these matters.
I don't think people are as happy as they used to be. You know what I noticed almost immediately, which is probably for good reason, like they had to make some things more efficient. It used to be way overstaffed at Whole Foods. Like you'd walk in and there'd be four cashiers sitting there just like begging you to come check out. Now there's actually like lines at the checkout.
All right, a couple things here. So the Texans schedule is going to be released tonight.
On the sports, yes.
On the NFL Network. Well, the reason why is, so tomorrow we're going to do a game in which we're not going to go up and down the schedule and figure out like win-loss, but we're going to...
We're going to do it in
a unique way, though.
Oh, how are we going to do it?
We are going to...
We're going to make Ellie spin around in her jeans?
No.
Is that what we're going to do?
We're going to recap what happened in each game. We're going to recap what happened in each of the 16 games and discuss on tomorrow's show.
Like, can we do like a trade for Osweiler at some point? Like week seven, they trade for Osweiler. Obviously not that. I don't like these mock drafts that have trades in them. Like, I want to, like, when I look at mock drafts and there's like four trades, you've lost me.
It's too confusing.
Yeah, so we're going to keep this relatively realistic, or is it going to be a wacky?
We'll do
a
pretty
forecast.
Realistic.
All right.
And, also, at 7:20, I think the Texans are going to have four national TV games, and I'm going to let you know which four I think will be on national television coming up at 7:20 this morning. And they also did a visit with somebody who I think all of us as a show would be very interested in round three. We'll let you know who that is as well. Time now for our giveaway. The Astros Championship Season, the premium hardcover coffee table book. Real simple question. Who finished out the game last night on the mound in the 7-1 win? 832-430-2946. Non-save situation. Who finished up? 832-430-2946. To get this book, winnersbooks.com. Promo code radio to save 30%. Winnersbooks.com with promo code radio. With the NBA games last night, Rockets win by 20. The Cavs barely held off Indiana. And also, the Jazz were able to get a game 2 win last night in Oklahoma City, 102-95. I feel even better about the postseason because that's the performance I wanted to see from the Rockets. A championship team, to me, when you're playing two home games to begin the first round in a 1-8 or a 2-7, one of those matchups, you win one of those games handily. And by the middle of the second quarter, it was pretty clear that was their game, and they were going to cruise to victory. And then you combine it with, I just don't think Cleveland is that good. I just don't think that Cleveland is that good of a basketball team. They have to get a great LeBron performance just to survive in game 2 at home against Indiana. And I think that Utah-OKC series, I think that's a 7-game series. And whoever wins that series will be facing the Rockets in the next round.
Right.
You'll be facing a tire team next week.
I almost feel better about the Rockets after one bad Chris Paul performance and one really inefficient. I'll say inefficient. I don't want to say bad because when I watch James Harden on the court, this was not like a game six in San Antonio type of appearance. Like, all the vigor was there. All the energy was there. The step back was there. The ball just wasn't going in the hoop. I mean, he had that 1-3. He had a really nice step back where he hit the three, and I swear the ball was three quarters of the way into the hoop,
and it
bounced out. It was that kind of an evening. But you have Gerald Green. You have Clint Capella locking down Karl Anthony Towns, as well as Nene. Nene needs to get credit for that as well. So I feel better about it. But I largely hear a whole lot of this. I hear a whole lot of the Bill Simmons type take after last night. Well, no, not that specific performance. That's not going to beat the Warriors, but they're still, in a lot of respects, rounding into playoff form. And versus the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have a good enough offense, horrendous defense, I thought last night you saw, all right, look, even on an off James Harden night, this is what happens. Like, even on an off James Harden night, this is what happens. And they still weren't shooting particularly well from the three-point line. They're still, what
30%.
Were they? 30% from 30%. The three-point line. It could have been a lot uglier if they had just been average from the three-point line.
Man, it's amazing. You look at this box score and just the math of this. I mean, Minnesota took 18 threes last night. The Rockets took 52. And I know they haven't shot well, but they have shooters all over the court. If you take 52 threes, you're going to end up hitting some of them. And Minnesota's just killing themselves with the lack of threes that they take in the game. All right, here's my take on the Warriors. I think the Rockets' defense in Game 1 and Game 2 is good enough to beat the Warriors, or at least contend. I think the big question about that series, which hopefully will happen, is they won Game 1 with Chris Paul being bad. They won Game 2 with Harden not shooting very well whatsoever, 2 for 18. If you look at the four games that you would have to win against Golden State, how many of those games do they need Chris Paul and James Harden to be great in the same game? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't think any of them. I look at various Warriors games where in the teams they've beaten and when they beat the Cavs and what have you. Is it always an instance of both guys being great or two guys being great evening?
I mean, for the Rockets to beat them.
Right.
Because last year, one team beat Golden State in the playoffs, period. They swept every other series. And so...
you know what? Okay. Sorry. Let me revise that. Yes, they both need to be great a lot, but it's not necessarily in terms of a huge offensive production. I think at times, depending on what the strategy is, the biggest thing for them is going to be adjusting to the Warriors' defense on any given night and taking and attacking that. And sometimes it's going to be James Harden, sometimes it's going to be Chris Paul. But so to answer your question, I don't know. In terms of those guys both having like 30-plus points in a game, I'll say once in a series, and they can still beat the Warriors.
I think it's encouraging or discouraging. It just depends how you look at it. But, I mean, two games in, we have seen the worst of Chris Paul and James Harden, which can be scary or it can be optimistic because they have won both games.
I would say Paul's performance was scarier just because I felt on Sunday, I didn't really want to vocalize it, but I almost was worried, like, is he not feeling himself? Is he not feeling healthy? But last night clearly just removed that idea completely.
It didn't concern me because it's not like, does Chris Paul routinely give up six turnovers in the playoffs?
No.
That was the most he'd given up in the playoffs since 2015.
It was more that he was passing up shots that I felt like, okay, you're on this team.
Yeah.
When you get an open three like that, you have to take that shot. And last night, you know, Chris Paul took those shots early in the game. Gerald Green was the guy who got them going, but Chris Paul hit some nice. He hit some big shots late in the first quarter to keep him within striking range, within 5 points.
And I think this too. A lot of times when we start talking about rust in the playoffs, we think of it in individual terms. Well, Chris Paul had played 4 games after his injuries, and he should be fine. But the lineups had been so shuffled up as guys alternately took time off or played fewer minutes that I think as a team, it's taking them a couple of games now to really get back into their rhythm and to really get back into that pace, not in points per possession, but just that pace and that rhythm and all of that. And let me say this one thing about this Timberwolves series that makes me uncomfortable. I don't like looking at Tom Thibodeau. I do not like looking at him one bit.
The way he fills out his suit.
He's how miserable he is.
Yeah.
He looks physically, emotionally, maybe spiritually miserable. I don't know if I've ever seen a human being as miserable as Tom.
I want to see what his wife looks like.
This year is extreme. I don't know if I've ever noticed him looking this miserable. And it's probably got a lot to do with the fact that he's Tom Thibodeau, defensive mastermind, and his team's defense sucks. So he is actually miserable. miserable out there every night watching his team just suck on defense.
Yeah, he's miserable.
Yeah, have you ever seen a person as miserable?
Seth, if they had the best defense in the league, Tom Thibodeau would be miserable.
He would still be miserable, but not quite. But there's still degrees of misery, you know?
He would still be miserable. Maybe not quite as much.
Did you watch, like, Hitler? Like, there was a time in Hitler's youth where you're like, oh, look at Hitler. He's kind of, he's got a bounce in his step. Or at the end, when he was all messed out and everything, it was really bad. It was really bad.
I like the Hitler-Thibodeau comparison.
No, I'm not comparing those two. I'm just talking about in terms of miserable human beings.
No, we can compare them. It's okay.
No, we certainly cannot. Don't even say that.
But Stephen A. compared Trump and Kaepernick.
So basically now you're comparing Kaepernick to Hitler. I got you.
Let's move on.
What was the point that you wanted to make?
I have a question for you guys. Did you guys watch the national or local broadcast yesterday?
I was at the game, so neither.
I watched both. Why?
I'm just asking because I put out a poll question at Sports Radio 610. Which did you watch? Did you watch the national or the local? It seems like overwhelming response so far. Most people watch the national.
It's fun to watch the national.
That's what I would assume.
No matter how much I like any given local broadcast crew, like for baseball or basketball, I like watching the national because it's a different perspective.
Yes. Now,
Reggie Miller.
Reggie
Miller.
You call it a Faustian bargain? You get Kevin Harlan, but in exchange... You have to get Reggie Miller.
Is a Faustian, is that when you do like a deal with the devil?
I think so.
That sounds like a better way to probably say it.
Yes, deal with
the devil. Is that a deal with the devil?
You get the greatness of Kevin Harlan, but in exchange, you have to listen to Reggie Miller's analysis all game long.
You know what I don't like about Reggie Miller? Reggie Miller would be an awful official. He's such a sucker for the flop. I've noticed this about Reggie Miller. Like, Reggie Miller will be, without seeing a proper game, because the deal with Chris Paul last night, where he kind of inadvertently threw the elbow, maybe cut his face or not, there was contact there, I'm guessing, but from the angle that Reggie Miller saw it, you wouldn't be able to tell. And he's like, oh, well, there's clearly contact there. Like, you fell for the enhanced flop there, Reggie.
That was a flop.
I've seen this before. Like, he'll say things. He's kind of like... our old buddy Phil Sims there. He'll eloquently describe things that never actually happened.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I mean, that's a great explanation for something that you can't actually see.